I'm keeping this.
There's a lot of great quotes in there. I really enjoyed reading the whole book. I'll probably revisit it quite often. So thank you so much for being here.
All right.
Thank you.
Have a great night.
For having us.
Please donate.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good luck with the pledge drive.
Thank you.
Support for this program comes from Edgewood College Theater, presenting Kimberly Bellflower's biting, funny new play, John Proctor is the Villain, directed by Jeannie Leap, February 28th to March 8th at the Diane Bullwig Theater. At a rural high school in Georgia, teens are studying the crucible while navigating love, sex, and school scandals. Holding a contemporary lens to the American classic, they question who is really the hero and what is the truth, discovering their own power in the process. Tickets at edgewood.edu/about/events/theater or search Edgewood College Theater.
Welcome to Radio Literature, Madison's weekly look at poetry, fiction, nonfiction, theater, and experimental writing for readers of all ages. Settle in for a half hour of conversation on radio literature. Here's your host, Melvin Hinton.
Because it's 7:30, you're listening to Radio Literature on WORT 89.9 FM out of Madison, Wisconsin. I am your host for this evening, Jason Compton. Melvin Hinton is away this week. There's no joke that it is pledge season, and we're going to talk a little bit about how you can support the show soon, but I do want to bring in my guest this evening. He has been with me on the program once before, John Hendel. Welcome back to Radio Literature, and welcome to the first time to the WORT studios on Bedford Street.
Yeah, thank you, Jason.
So we needed a theme for tonight, covering for Melvin in studio as we do this season, and wanted to keep it light. So I gave John just kind of the broad theme of comedy, and John and I have been collaborating on Matters Comical since the fall when we worked together to direct The Blue Comet for Madison Shakespeare Company. John's going to be directing Comedy of Errors for us this summer. But I do want to talk about things that, like I said, that are not a laughing matter. This station does not run on helium and good vibes. It does run on community support. And we're asking you to help celebrate our community by contributing tonight as part of the pledge drive. Ralph is on the phones tonight. He is being fueled by... Ralph is on the phones. Dave is in the booth. Thanks for that correction, Dave. But Dave's in the booth for us tonight, but Ralph is on the phones, and he's ready to take your call at 608-256-2001. Ralph won't be on the website, but you can get to the website at wortfm.org/donate. We are being asked tonight to ask you to sign on to continue to support Radio Literature and WORT. We're hoping to get five of you joining us tonight in supporting the show. I put in my contribution today, so I will thank myself. we're especially hoping this show has been on for quite a long time. Those of you who listen regularly know that Melvin, of course, is the main host, but he was part of a collective that started this program many years ago, and some of those people have fallen off over time, and we certainly understand that there are contributors, there are donors to WORT that have fallen off over time. We would love to see you back. Your contributions will actually be doubled by the support of a generous underwriter. So if you have been a supporter of WORT in the past, please consider coming back, flagging yourself as such, because your contributions, again, will be doubled by a generous underwriter. John.
Yes, Jason.
Thanks for joining us tonight.
No, thank you for having me.
Let's turn away from matters of community radio support to matters of humor. Which I gave John very little to go on. We do have a Shakespeare scene that we'll be performing a little bit later in the evening. But I wanted to just ask John, who is a writer, about the concept of humor in the written word, in the literary form. And I guess the first question I wanted to ask is, John, do you remember the first joke and the first like funny story that you read?
Oh goodness. I do not. I don't remember any specific jokes, but I do remember because Like, I would grow up with very old, like, joke and riddle books, and they just tickled me throughout.
Okay, so you are still, John is a little bit younger than I am. So, John, you're still part of the joke book generation. That was something that I wanted to bring up, is that there used to be kind of a popular trope was that if you wanted to be popular with people or quick with a comeback, if you wanted to cut people down to size, you could pretty much, memorize, comebacks and barbs out of books. This was a thing. I don't feel that we see that as much anymore. People just sort of devouring joke books to have that at the ready.
No, I don't. I think you're right. And, just thinking about it right now, I do think a lot of the humor, a lot of the kind of joke book stuff I would have as a very young child, like pre-K and whatnot, would be sort of in the Goofus and Gallant vein.
Okay.
A very silly person does a very silly thing. I believe the book my it was a book my mom had from the 60s, but it was along the lines of like, silly Billy does this, silly Billy does that. Or actually I remember as well, like I was a very big fan of the Amelia Bedelia books, the puns and the mm-hmm. the confusion there.
Yeah, so humor can be it can be instructive. The sort of Goofus and Gallant, we're meant to, if not laugh outright, then certainly smirk at Goofus's missteps. It can be funny because it is speaking the exact truth that you think wouldn't be spoken, or by completely subverting expectations. And in preparation for tonight, I did a little scouting around. In 2008, there was a report published by the University of Wolverhampton in which they attempted to categorize the 10 oldest jokes known to human civilization. And John and I took a little look at that earlier today, and I'd asked John to prepare to talk about a couple of those with us tonight. So, John, what caught your eye from the 10 oldest jokes in human history?
Well, so first let me kind of say about my just general principle and understanding of comedy and sort of how it works is I connected a lot to the concept of tragedy. And I say that tragedy is a good plan gone bad. Comedy is therefore a bad plan gone bad. And so I saw those sort of things in some of these jokes. So, for instance, this 5th century AD Greek joke about teaching a donkey new tricks, wishing to teach his donkey not to eat, a pedant did not offer him any food. When the donkey died of hunger, he said, "I've had a great loss." Just when he had learned not to eat, he died. And that to me is just structurally, it's a bad plan gone bad.
Right.
And I feel like so much of humor, and you talk about the subversion and saying things that may not be surprise people, I think humor then becomes sort of a fear response of, oh, you shouldn't do that. That's a bad idea. I bet this is going to end exactly how I imagined. And then there's this laughter comes from the satisfaction of it ending exactly how you fear it will.
Mm-hmm. And the sort of the inverse of that, that is a story, like you said, it's a bad plan that reaches the obvious bad ending. This was not something that we specifically talked about, but because the dog was mentioned, it put to mind the Shaggy Dog story, which to me is always a tricky area of humor. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't know.
Okay, so that and this is not a discipline that I'm super into, but the Shaggy Dog story is one that meanders through all sorts of different twists and turns. Starts out by establishing a premise of let me tell you how shaggy this dog was, but goes on to tell you about the history of chemistry and a man's journey around the world, and then at the end the dog is finally revealed and says, that dog wasn't that shaggy. And so the humor is sort of in the anticipation and in the twists and turns, instead of a bad plan going exactly bad in the way that was expected. Instead, the story subverts, the expectation that you're going to get to an ending.
Well, I think, I do actually, so I never heard it in the exact Shaggy Dog context, but I'm familiar with jokes like that. I would hear that, I've heard them in high school. I don't remember exactly how they would go, but it was and I think where the humor came from there is not necessarily the content of the joke, but the telling of the joke. that it becomes, yes, in this story, I don't care, but the person telling it has just promulgated that bad plan.
And the performance of it was something that I wanted to get into because, you know, although on radio literature, we do talk about, we do gospel, you know, music, we talk about theater quite a bit. But I did want to think about the written word and how jokes can change in the telling. Because, especially on paper, that Shaggy Dog story, you're not getting the inflection. You don't hear the tease in the teller's voice. What is it about, because you are a writer and you are a performer and a director, what about the performance of it can change a joke versus the writer setting it down and then it's sort of up to the reader then to interpret, is this funny to me? How am I hearing it, seeing it play out in my head? You know, people have those different processes. What do you think transforms jokes between the written word and the spoken word?
Well, I think thinking about that in terms of preparing a performer to sort of land a funny line or tell a joke in sort of the way the writer envisioned it, I think first and foremost, the writer has to give permission to laugh is a first step, and just set up that this will go in a certain pace, this will go towards a certain place, and this is coming from characters who, again, are acting in ways orthogonal to how society might expect.
I wanted to bring us back to the fact that this is a pledge drive show tonight. I had mentioned at the top of the show that you can reach us at 608-256-2001, where Ralph will be ready to take your call. He's being fueled by dinner from Bonzo tonight. You can also catch us on WORTFM.org/donate. I'd also mentioned at the top of the show that lapsed donors are being matched one for one by a generous outside contributor, and new donors tonight are also being matched. So please consider, if you have never been on the WRT rolls tonight, but you may have joined because you heard John was going to be on, please do consider picking up the phone or grabbing that keyboard, wartfm.org/donate, 608-256-2001. There are a variety of thank you gifts available at different levels. One I want to mention is that there is a new Wart t-shirt. It is nominally at the $100 pledge level, but if you become a monthly donor, you can get that at what is considered the 89.9 level with a $7.50 monthly commitment. So that's a thing to consider if you just give us a call, 608-256-2001, extension 1, online at wortfm.org. There's an orange donation heart. John?
Yes, Jason.
I wanted to talk about the oldest joke that was in the University of Wolverhampton one. I don't think this will be an outright FCC violation, and it is as classical as it gets. So this is the oldest joke written down, and this goes back to the it's speaking truth, but a truth that maybe you thought wouldn't be spoken. So this was a collection of Sumerian proverbs. They've got it dated out of Mesopotamia somewhere between 1900 and 1600 BC. I guess I'll clean it up a little bit for the primetime audience. But the phrasing goes, "Something which has never occurred since time immemorial. A young woman did not break wind in her husband's lap." So, John, you want to break that one down?
I will confess, this is one you sent me, and I had to sit and kind of wonder what is happening beyond the evident bodily function here. But I do think it sort of speaks to, it's looking at it in terms of, you know, bodily humor and how that has sort of continued all throughout. Yeah, I think there's just a continuity to finding the dirt in life.
It's the dirt, it's the crudity, but also the setup is something which has never occurred since time immemorial. It sets up the expectation. This could be something grandiose. This could be somebody speaking, you know, a wisdom that you know truly lives within
that
them.
That is fair.
And no, it just becomes, you know, that's true. if enough young ladies sit on your lap for enough time, it's bound to happen. But that's not the truth that you were expecting.
I see. That is sort of the image then of this mundanity followed by presumed profundity.
Did you have something profound that you found there that you wanted to share?
You mean like another
joke? One of the other jokes, yes.
Yeah, no, I really, you know, the one of the ones mentioned was from the Odyssey.
Hmm.
When Odysseus is battling the Cyclops, and it's just a very simple, almost pun from Homer, that Odysseus tells the Cyclops that his real name is Nobody. And when Odysseus instructs his men to attack the Cyclops, the Cyclops shouts, "Help! Nobody is attacking me." And there we go, nobody comes to help.
And that is a joke that, because it's an oral history, that was spoken before it was written. So you can see, and that is one that I think plays better spoken aloud. Mm. Now on the paper, you go, okay, that's a good trick. But you imagine Homer, you know, and his spiritual descendants out there, you know, ranting, "Nobody, where is nobody?" As the Cyclops runs around, you know, in anger.
Well,
I think that. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. And you talk about the profundity, being brought up with the sort of mundane. That is a narrative, you know, where, you know, it's to the gods. It opens, you know, speaking of the muse, and all of a sudden you get this silly little pun.
I think going back, maybe this is one of the earliest Goofus and Gallant type jokes. They had one dating back from Greece. They have got it 4th or 5th century AD, so relatively contemporary compared to the Mesopotamian joke. It goes simply, asked by the court barber how he wanted his hair cut, the king replied, "In silence."
I relate to this one, yeah.
Go on. You being a hair haver.
No, yeah, it is. I do agree. I'm someone who would introvertedly sit and just enjoy the act of a haircut. But no, it's subverting the expectation, because obviously it's going to be talking like the result of a haircut. You want a style, and then he's simply talking about the procedure itself.
Right. You're getting an answer, and it's an honest answer, but it's not to the question asked. It's also one that, in that single sentence, it paints a picture. Now we know a lot about who the barber is and what he's probably like.
And we know a bit about the king as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that tells a lot, because the king at that point is not even... he expects the hair to come out in a way that the barber's going to preternaturally know. But what the barber does not understand is that he yaps.
Yep. Yep. So we definitely know how the two relate to one another.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted to talk about how you can relate to WORT tonight. And I didn't start out in the spirit of gratitude that I should have. I appreciate personally the fact that I'm able to be here tonight. I love the fact that we have a show called Radio Literature. When I first learned about it years ago, it was, you know, some years ago when Melvin asked me to appear on the program, I thought it was fantastic that such a thing existed. And it does exist because of the support of the community. The community in past pledge drives, you have made it possible for us to have nice, clean soundboards. Yes, it sounds better in the studio. It sounds better for you. It helps WORT continue its mission of being not just a program where a couple of guys can get together and talk about Mesopotamian jokes, but to be a news gathering organization, to be a music broadcaster, to be a podcast producer. I mention this from time to time when I'm on, in something that's kind of low key on the WORT site, but WORT is actually quite modern. We are not just terrestrial radio. We are not just streaming live internet worldwide on wortfm.org. Most of the news and talk programs are available in podcast form. That is actually usually how I listen to Radio Literature. I'm often in a rehearsal with John Thursday nights at 7:30 p.m., but my phone's going to get that notification at about 8:10 that Radio Literature is ready for me to listen to. So to support the mission of WORT, yes, born in the 1970s, but very modern, very contemporary, delivering news, music, information worldwide in a very 2025 manner, really ask you to consider supporting us tonight by giving a call, 608-256-2001. You can also reach us at wortfm.org/donate. Ralph is on the phone. He's being powered by Bonzo. We'd love to hear from five of you tonight with contributions to the show. While that happens, I thought that John and I would contribute a little bit to the Radio Literature tradition of when Madison Shakespeare performers are on, of sharing a little scene. I went to a quick, straightforward comedy that I knew had a two-hander scene.
Yeah, you found a nice broad one.
Yeah, this is a scene from the two gentlemen of Verona between Valentine, who will be played by John, and Speed, who I'll be playing, who is his servant. Sir, your glove?
Not mine. My gloves are on.
Oh, why then, this may be yours, for this is but one.
Ha! Let me see. Aye, give it me. It's mine. Sweet ornament that decks a thing divine. Ah, Sylvia, Sylvia.
Madam Sylvia! Madam Sylvia!
How now, sirrah?
She is not within hearing, sir.
Why, sir, who bade you call her?
Your worship, sir, or else I mistook.
Well, you'll still be too forward.
And yet I was last chidden for being too slow.
Go to, sir. Tell me. Do you know Madam Sylvia?
She that your worship loves?
Why, how know you that I am in love?
Marry, by these special marks. First, you have learned, like Sir Proteus, to wreathe your arms like a malcontent, to relish a love song like a robin redbreast, to walk alone like one that had the pestilence, to sigh like a schoolboy that had lost his ABC, to weep like a young wench that had buried her granddam. You were wont, when you laughed, to crow like a cock, when you walked, to walk like one of the lions. When you fasted, it was presently after dinner. When you looked sadly, it was for want of money. And now you are metamorphosed with a mistress that when I look on you, I can hardly think you my master.
Are all these things perceived in me?
They are all perceived without ye.
Without me? They cannot.
Without you? Nay, that's certain, for without you were so simple, none else would. But you are so without these follies that these follies are within you and shine through you like the water in a urinal, that not an eye sees you, but is a physician to comment on your malady.
But tell me, dost thou know my Lady Sylvia?
She that you gaze on so as she sits at supper?
Hast thou observed that? Even she, I mean.
Why, sir, I know her not.
Dost thou know her by my gazing on her, and yet know'st her not?
Is she not hard-favored, sir?
Not so fair, boy, as well-favored.
Sir, I know that well enough.
What dost thou know?
That she is not so fair as, of you, well-favored.
I mean that her beauty is exquisite, but her favor infinite.
That's because the one is painted, and the other out of all count.
How painted? And how out of all count?
Marry, sir, so painted to make her fair that no man counts of her beauty.
How esteem'st thou me? I account of her beauty.
Ye never saw her since she was deformed.
How long has she been deformed?
Ever since you loved her.
I have loved her ever since I saw her, and still I see her beautiful.
If you love her, you cannot see her.
Why?
Because love is blind. Oh, that you had mine eyes, or your own eyes, had the light that they were wont to have when you chid at Sir Proteus for going ungartered.
What should I see then?
Your own present folly and her passing deformity. For he, being in love, could not see to garter his hose, and you, being in love, cannot see to put on your hose.
Belike, boy, then, you are in love. For last morning, you could not see to wipe my shoes.
True, sir, I was in love with my bed. I thank you. You swinged me for my love, which makes me the bolder to chide you for yours.
In conclusion, I stand affected to her.
I would you were set so your affection would cease.
Last night she enjoined me to write some lines to one she loves.
And have you?
I have.
Are they not lamely writ?
No, boy, but as well as I can do them. Peace, here she comes.
Oh, excellent motion. Oh, exceeding puppet. Now will he interpret to her.
That's fun.
Yeah, thanks for that, John.
Oh, thank you.
We talked a little bit about types of humor, classic, origins. You as a writer, why don't you just tell us, do you have an approach to comedy? Do you have a way to craft a joke?
It's the very simple sort of, you just set up and then punchline, you set up and then reveal, and pulling the rug out from someone. That to me is pulling the rug out from a character is the most effective way to create that sort of comedy. And again, as I mentioned, the bad plan gone bad, but they not just the rug's pulled out from them, but they slip upon the rug or whatnot. That is how I set it up. I do see, and part of my voice as a writer is seeing the world as a lot of bad plans going bad. And to me, just a natural comedy will come out of that. But in terms of literally crafting a bam, bam, bam joke, it is, you know, this is a terrific example of having a straight character and having a silly character, and the interplay between those two, the bad plan being the straight character trusting someone who's a bit of an oaf, and the oaf is going to behave like an oaf, and then you laugh then at the straight man who gets the pie in the face and whatnot.
One other thing I wanted to bring up, actually, one thing I wanted to bring up after the fact that I do want to ask one more time, please do consider supporting WRT. Pledge lines will be open, and of course, you can donate at any time on the website. We do ask that the form or the caller will ask you your favorite shows on WRT. Please mention Radio Literature. Yes, it does help us get credit, but it helps broadly the staff and board and volunteers that run the station understand what's important to the listeners out there. I do want to mention we do have a contribution in, and I'm going to thank Anonymous, but she did send us a nice contribution. She mentions programs including All World Music and the Friday Public Affair, but really appreciate you, caller, for supporting us tonight on Radio Literature. One thing I wanted to mention just before we go is that social media, and particularly the always on subtitle trend, is sort of changing the way that I interact with comedy. You get stand-up comedians, and it's a good way to discover performers that you wouldn't necessarily know. But I've noticed that because the default now so often, even when sound is on, is to put subtitles up, you're getting the punchline, you're getting part of the setup before it's being performed. And I have a hard time like forcing myself to like it, because it feeds the I want to know, but also I would prefer to let the performer get to it. Have you encountered this, and is it changing your relationship with comedy?
No, I know exactly what you're describing. And short answer, no. Because I do think, and this is, I'm someone who will repeatedly watch comedy movies that I've enjoyed many, many times, and I'm well acquainted with all the jokes that are coming. There's a joy in the anticipation, and even still, that structure is going to be there, and that structure will always make me laugh. And sometimes even just the knowing makes me laugh. There's, you know, that's just classic dramatic irony. And yeah, it's in a very small form just to see, you know, a caption or a subtitle moments before a joke is told. But I think that's sort of the dramatic irony of where the joke is heading. And then also, for me, perhaps as a performer or even as a writer, I hear those lines being said or how they'll be said. Mm-hmm. And so if they're delivered in a fresh way, I'm surprised. And I understand the question, but I don't think that it pulls anything necessarily.
Yeah, it's bending my brain a little bit, and I need to sort of learn some discipline around it quickly. And it doesn't necessarily have to be dirty stuff, but do you remember encountering jokes that you just weren't ready for as a kid? So you maybe got half of them, and then you would you reached your teens or your 20s and said like, oh, now I know what that's about.
Oh goodness. No, nothing comes to mind. Well, only in terms of, so for instance, grew up as a very big fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Sure.
That is, even at this day, or actually The Simpsons as well, these are shows that would come up with just references that I do not understand. The Simpsons had a joke about James Coco eating a bunch of donuts. I, to this day, do not know who James Coco is, but I will associate him with eating a bunch of donuts.
Once you see the man, it'll make perfect sense. There were deep cuts. If you didn't know Trace Beaulieu in particular, a lot of jokes on Mystery Science Theater were going to go over your head. My version of it, maybe we'll come back to this on a future version of the program. I first read Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when I was 9, and there are just some jokes about being an adult, having a job, living in Britain that I did not have the experience to deal with. I want to thank you for joining us on this special Pledge Drive edition of Radio Literature. Thank you, John. Thank you, Dave in the booth. Thank you, Ralph on the phones. This has been Jason Compton. Annie J will be hosting the show with you next week. Thank you.
We are listener-sponsored community radio. Join us again next Thursday at 7:30 for more features of local, national, and international interest.
FPC Live presents Murder by Death, Farewell Tour, with Laura Jane Grace on Friday, July 18th at the Sylvie. Formed in 2000 in Bloomington, Indiana, Murder by Death have spent 25 years carving a resolute DIY path with their special blend of literary orchestral rock. But after playing hundreds of shows around the country, making many albums and many fans, the band is going on one last ride and then hanging up their instruments. Says founding guitarist Adam Turla, "On the one hand, we've had a long-running career where we got to make art for a living, but on the other, we have always eluded any kind of traditional success." Opener Laura Jane Grace is an American musician, best known as the founder of the punk rock band Against Me. Tickets for the show are available at thesylvie.com. FPC Live presents Murder by Death, Farewell Tour, with Laura Jane Grace on Friday, July 18th at the Sylvie. Live music lives at WORT Madison.
Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together and welcome to the stage, Chumbawamba.
Up this morning, my temperature high.
Bye, bye, bye.
I'll never buy nothing again. I lied.